Well, sort of. The construction is well understood. So there will be nothing really exciting about my talk, because the main purpose of this talk is just to go through some basics of material cohomology theory and clean up some of the mess left behind. And so I first realized that something was fishy out there when we were working with Sasha on material cohomology theory Browerly writers. So you start with a sense of simple algebra over field F, you look on the corresponding theory Brouwer scheme, you want to analyze its motive. And so it sits in the category DM minus of your base field. But I don't want to restrict to perfect fields only. And over non-perfect fields, there is no such category. Or in principle, you can define. There are several ways how you can define, but it will be some kind of math that you don't really understand. So you would like to have a similar construction as the one over perfect fields, which works over non-perfect fields. So fighting with that for a while, I realized that, okay, let's give up, let's just work out what we can only over perfect fields. But even in this case, everything went wrong immediately, because the main tool in all such matters is to extend scale it from F to the functional field of theory Brouwer variety, which is never perfect if F is of positive characteristic. So we are stuck. Either you have to work only in the critic zero case, or you have to do something with non-perfect fields. And that's what we are going to do now. So what is the main reason why over non-perfect fields we do have a difficulty? So the theorem, which was proved by Voevodsky over perfect fields, but we don't know whether it works or not over non-perfect fields, and probably doesn't, I just don't know, have no counterexamples and no proof, is the following theorem. So let M be a homotopy invariant Nisnevich shift with transfers on smooth over F. Then, assuming that F is perfect, if F is perfect, then our shift M is strictly homotopy invariant. In other words, its cohomology groups are also homotopy invariant. Hi Nisnevich of X with coefficient in F coincides with Hi Nisnevich of X cross A1 with coefficient, sorry, it was M. Do you have something to erase with? Well, apparently not. But I can do it with my fingers. Oh, there is something. Yeah, great. Thank you. One is enough. And the proof, the only proof that we do know, use essentially the fact that the base field is perfect, because what you really want to know is that any integral scheme is smooth in the vicinity of the generic point. And that's exactly what holds over perfect fields and does not hold over non-perfect ones. So it's not clear what is the status of this theorem over non-perfect fields. That is, as I said, I don't have no counterexamples showing that it's just absolutely false over non-perfect fields. And as we'll see, there are many cases when this is still true, but we don't have a proof. So the first observation is that without losing too much information, we can resolve this and any other similar difficulties over any field, for all non-perfect fields, and without losing much information, I mean just invert the characteristic P. In this case, everything becomes trivial. So if in this case M is not just Hamiltonian invariant is near sheaf, but Hamiltonian invariant Z1 over P module, then everything is true. So once you have inverted P, everything becomes essentially perfectly trivial. And that's the first subject of my talk, to show how you can construct the corresponding category DM minus over non-perfect fields after inverting P. So let's start with the following brief discussion. So we'll need, and not only in this first part of the talk, but in the second part as well, the notion of extension of scalars in near sheaves with transfers. So let's say we have E over F extension of field. And we can consider the category of smooth correspondences over F and smooth, well, finite correspondences over E. So in this case, the objects are smooth schemes over F, and here smooth schemes over E, or finite, everything of finite type, of course. And here morphisms are finite correspondences over defined over F, and here defined over E. And you have an obvious functor, which is just tensoring over F with E, or we'll also denote it by phi, which sends X to X, E. You extend scalars in your scheme. And if you have a cycle Z in X cross Y, which is a finite correspondence, you extend scalars in that cycle as well. So everything is perfectly clear. So we have this obvious functor on categories, and let me remind you that pre-sheaves with transfers are defined as additive contravariant functors from the corresponding category to abelian groups. So let's now take a look on these pre-sheaves with transfers. I'll denote the category of pre-sheaves with transfers over E in the easiest way, pre-sheaves with transfers over E. So you get a functor which is typically denoted phi lower star. This is direct image functor to pre-sheaves with transfers over F. So if you have a pre-sheave with transfers M, for example, over here, then phi lower star of M applied to X is the same as M applied to X. So it's just composition with this functor phi. And as usual, the theorem of Kahn tells you that this functor does have a left adjoint, which will denote phi sharp, which goes in the opposite direction. And which can be given explicitly by certain formula which involves direct limit over some index and category, which I won't try to remind you. So the fact is that we do have a well-defined left adjoint which goes in the opposite direction. And that's essentially the extension of scalars functor for pre-sheaves with transfers. So if you start with the pre-sheaves with transfers over F, you can apply this phi sharp and get the pre-sheaves with transfers over E, which will, so instead of writing phi sharp of F, we'll often write phi FE. So So external scalars in a pre-shift with transfers. Note further that this phi lower star takes shift to shift by more or less obvious reasons, and so you get the corresponding morphisms, the corresponding functor on the category of shifts. So Nishnevich shifts with transfers, I will denote Nishnevich shifts with transfers, as you might have guessed. So in here we have a full subcategory consisting of Nishnevich shifts with transfers over E. The functor phi lower star takes it to Nishnevich shifts with transfers over F. And once again, this functor does have a left adjoint, which will denote phi upper star, and sometimes also will use notation tensor over F with E, even though it might be sort of confusing. The point, however, is that in all cases that we'll consider, this phi sharp will take shift to shift. So it will coincide with this phi upper star, so there will be no confusion. But in principle, if you don't know nothing, you define phi sharp of F as phi upper star of F as phi sharp of F, and then shiftifies it in Nishnevich topology. So if you don't know that phi sharp of F is already a shift, then you have to shiftify. But in all cases that we'll be considering, this phi sharp of F will itself be a shift, so you'll need no shiftification. Let's now consider the following situation, the following very special case. So let's assume that our base field F is of characteristic P, positive characteristic, and E coincides with F P inverse. So characteristic of F is positive, and E coincides with F P inverse. So you extract p's roots of all elements from F, so that E over F is a purely inseparable extension. Note that this field E, just as a field, is isomorphic to F itself. Raising to the power p is an isomorphism of E and F. So that in this picture, we actually do have the same category appearing two times. Since E and F are, in this case, the same field, well, up to canonical isomorphism, we have, so let me first look on correspondence. I don't want, so let me delay the shift with transfers. So we have smooth correspondences over F goes to smooth correspondences over E, and this may be identified with smooth correspondences over F. This is our functor phi. And as one sees already, this is nothing but the Frobenius twist functor. X goes to X twisted once. Well, X twisted once is exactly defined in this way, as base change in X by means of the Frobenius endomorphism of your field. The remarkable thing about this Frobenius twist functor is that there exists a canonical morphism called Frobenius morphism, which goes from, so this is the notation for the functor, but now we have a canonical morphism phi sub x from x to x twisted once. So this is the so-called Frobenius morphism. So this phi sub x is a morphism of schemes of finite type over F, which is a finite, flat, purely inseparable. Finite, flat, well, flat at least when X is smooth, so I'll be assuming that X is smooth. Purely inseparable. Of degree p to the power dimension of x. Since this phi sub x is finite, we can view its graph as a correspondence going in the opposite direction. So we consider graph of phi sub x. This is a cycle in x cross x1, which maps isomorphically onto x, but finitely onto x twisted once. And now we can transpose, say, gamma t, which will be contained in x1 cross x. So this is finite correspondence from x twisted once to f. So in the category of schemes, you have morphisms only in one direction. But in the category of correspondence, you have morphisms going in both directions, from x to x twisted once and back. Now we have the following theorem. The first part of the theorem claims that phi identity to phi small is a natural transformation of functions. So this is an integral statement. It doesn't require inverting P or anything. The next part will require inverting P. Now we set psi sub x will be equal to 1 over P to the power dimension of x gamma phi transpose. So this is okay. The claim is, so this is always a correspondence going from x twisted once to x, and now the claim is that, so it shouldn't be phi sub x, it should be psi sub x, sorry. Then psi phi 1 over P to identity is a natural transformation inverse to Well, so nothing very surprising is happening here. You would expect that when you make a purely inseparable extension, well, both compositions should be multiplication by some power of p, and that's essentially what is stated in here. But let me be, this theorem is very precise claim as to what happened. The proof is relatively straightforward. There are, however, a couple of points to be verified. So let me just outline briefly how the proof goes, and I will skip the details, of course. So we start with the following remark. Let f x to y be a finite surjective morphism of schemes, of irreducible smooth schemes. Of same dimension, such that f of x over f of y is purely inseparable. Then both compositions f lower star f upper star and f upper star f lower star coincide with multiplication by degree of f. Well, note first that such an f is forced to be flat. So it's a finite flat morphism. And so both direct image and inverse image operations are defined just for all cycles. And the claim is that these two operations are inverse one to another up to the scalar factor degree of f. And one composition equal to degree of f by projection formula, so this does not require no assumptions, special assumptions on f. When you want to prove that the other composition also equals degree of f, you need just to note that f happens to be bijective on the set of points. So that's the main observation, which is straightforward from commutative algebra. And once you know that, you immediately conclude that the operation f lower star is injective. So to show that this guy equals to this one, you can compose both sides on the left with f lower star, because this map is injective. And what happens here will be, according to this formula, precisely f lower star times degree f, and the same you get here. So this part is entirely trivial. This one requires to know that the map f is bijective set theoretically. The second lemma is slightly more subtle and concerns the following situation. So we assume that X is smooth irreducible. and the Z equidimensional cycle on X. Then we can take a look on this cycle Z twisted once. We have this twist operation on cycle that we discussed previously. On the other hand, we can take a look on phi sub x lower star of Z. And the claim is that this guy equals p to the power dimension of Z times Z twisted one. So we have the following formula, which holds for any cycle. As I said, Z has to be equidimensional so that you could discuss dimension of Z. In general, you reduce immediately the general case to the case when Z is a reducible cycle, and then you see readily that both cycles, so Z twisted once, need not be an integral scheme, unfortunately. That's what happens when you make purely inseparable extension of field, it might become, it might get nilpotent, so it will be irreducible, but maybe not reduced. Because of that, when you look on the cycle Z twisted once, it is a cycle associated to this closed subscheme. So that's what is meant here. It's not this scheme, but the cycle associated to this scheme. However, this scheme is at least irreducible, and you see immediately that both sides are the same closed subscheme, precisely the support of Z twisted once, with appropriate multiples. You have just to compare the multiplicity. They are the same on both sides. And in general, it takes some time to verify that this is exactly the case. Let me, however, indicate why this is trivial, let's say, in case Z is smooth. Or at least Z, when Z twisted once is reduced. So if you happen to know that Z twisted once is reduced, then everything is easy. In general, you have to make some further manipulation to show that this is the case. But at least that will confirm that this should be the case. And the idea is that we do have the following commutative diagram. Here we have Z embeds into X. Here we have Z twisted once, which is a closed subscheme of X twisted once. I assume that this scheme is integral, so that this closed subscheme will be the same as a cycle. And here you have phi sub Z and phi sub X respectively. So the Frobenius morphism is a nested formation, at least on the level of scheme, so this diagram commutes. And this readily implies that phi sub x, the direct image of this cycle Z, will be the same as Z twisted once times the degree of this map. And degree of this map is precisely p to the power dimension of Z. But as I said, in Z need not be geometrically reduced, so Z twisted once could be reduced, and you get some minor troubles in dealing with this question, but they're relatively easy to resolve. So this is the second fact. And finally, let me just prove the first claim of the theorem, and then I'll skip all the rest. Let me show that phi is a nested summation of functions. So proof of the theorem. Rudolph-Steiner-Hilstatt, we define correspondence Z from X to Y. And the claim is that the following diagram of correspondences commutes. Here you have X, here you have Y, this is our correspondence Z, here we have phi sub Y, Y to the C. So X and Y here both are smooth and let's say reducible. We have X twisted once. This is given by cycle Z twisted once, and this is phi sub X. So you claim that this diagram of correspondence is commutes. That's precisely what it means, that phi is a natural summation of functions. So let's make an immediate computation. So what is phi sub y composed with z? Correspondences are quite easy to compose with actual morphisms, both on the left and on the right. When you compose it on one side, you get direct image operation, and on the other side, you get inverse image operation. So what stands here is one X cross phi Y lower star of Z. So Z is a cycle in X cross Y. You consider the morphism 1X cross phi Y, which is a morphism from X cross Y to X cross Y1, and you'll get a cycle in X cross Y1. That's precisely this correspondence. The other composition now you compose with a morphism on the other side. So it will begin by the inverse the image of a cycle. So it will pull back. So it will be phi sub x cross 1 y twisted once of upper star of z twisted once. You ask whether these two cycles are the same. And to see that they are the same, we apply to both cycles the injective morphism phi x cross 1 y twisted once lower star. We apply this operation. From one of the lemmas above, we do know that this operation is injective, so if we can check that after application of this operation we get the same, then that would imply that they were equal from the very beginning. So when we apply this operation to the cycle over here, you get a composition of direct image and inverse image. And we do know that this gives you just multiplication by degree, so when we apply it over here, we get P to the power dimension of x z twisted 1. Now when we apply to this guy, we'll get phi sub x. So you have composition of two direct images. This will be direct image corresponding to the composition morphism. It will be phi sub x cross phi sub y of z. So in other words, phi x cross y lower star of z. And that's computed over here. So what you get is precisely p to the power dimension of z times z twisted 1. finally, just suffice to know that since Z was finite over X, dimension of Z is the same as dimension of X. So these two cycles are the same. Okay, now we can prove the first main result. Well, the point here is that, of course, we're interested in the extension of scalar function. But this function is relatively hard to analyze and understand. So instead, we work with a direct image function, phi lower star, which is much easier, well, which is such a simple equation formula, so it's much easier to work with it. We have the following case. First, let's cover the category of correspondences. So when we look on smooth correspondences over F and smooth correspondences over F e to the power minus infinity, so this is the perfect closure of F. We extract all iterations of p roots, so this is already a perfect field. And we have a functor in this direction. So X goes to X of p minus infinity. So this is just the same as before, extension of scalar functor. The claim is that if we invert p, I won't write 1 over p in parentheses, in brackets. So I'll just assume that we did that in our mind, that we invert p everywhere. So after inversion of p, this function becomes an equivalence of categories. Well, this follows easily from our previous result, because so we first have to check that maps don't change when we apply this function. In other words, correspondences from X to Y to correspondences of X. Let me just write F infinity instead of this rather lengthy notation of X F infinity to Y F infinity, that this is an isomorphism. And we write that this is the same as direct limit over all n's of correspondences from X F n to Y F n, where F n is F p to the power minus n. So F p minus infinity is the direct limit of the tower of fields. You first extract pth roots, and then you extract pth roots from pth roots, and so on. So this is the nth stage of this tower. So by usual properties of correspondences, each finite correspondence over F infinity is actually defined over some finite stage of an appropriate F sub n. So we get the tau of maps, correspondence from X to Y goes to correspondence from X F1 to Y F1, then to correspondence from X F2 to Y F2, and so on. And on each stage, this is just the previous case that we have considered when you look on F P inverse. And in that case, we established that extension of scalars was an equivalence of categories. Actually, we even showed that this is an equivalence which is isomorphic to the identity function. Not only is an equivalence much stronger than that. So this will be an ISON. The same will be applicable to all other arrows. So all this chain of maps consists of isomorphs, so direct limits are the same as all terms in this chain. And finally, we have to show that each scheme over here actually belongs to what comes from here. In other words, in the category of smooth correspondences, each scheme is defined over F. And that is also similar to what followed from what we did before, because if you start with any scheme X smooth, well, maybe X is not so good, let me call it X, Y, Z, U. U over F infinity smooth of finite type. I want to show that there exists X over F smooth of finite type such that X F infinity is isomorphic to U in the category of correspondences. They won't be, of course, isomorphic as schemes that you cannot achieve. In the case of correspondence, you can resolve this problem. As always, this U is actually defined over some F sub n. So you can write U is UN F infinity, where UN over FN smooth scheme of finite type. UN cannot be further descended to F. But what you can do, you can say, okay, FN is still isomorphic to F. And to say that UN, so if we identify FN with F, if we forget that this extension of F, just look on this as a field, then to say that UN comes from X, from F, is the same as to say that this happens to be Frobenius twist and Frobenius twist of some other smooth scheme, which it need not be. However, it is isomorphic in the category of correspondence to its own Frobenius twist. So you look on this UN over FN, you say, let's use the isomorphism of FN and F and get this UN tilde over F. And then when the extent scale is in UN, you get a morphism from, so this will be n Frobenius twist of n, and you have a morphism, so it will be un twisted n times, and from un you have a morphism over here. This is the Frobenius morphism, which happens to be an ISO. Okay, so that covers this theorem. So that the category of correspondences over F and over FP minus infinity, after you invert P, they become canonically equivalent. And the equivalence in question is the just extension of scalars function. But this readily implies that the corresponding functor phi lower star, which relates pre-sheaves with transfers, is also an equivalence of categories. Phi lower star pre-sheaved with transfer over F infinity to perceive the transfers over F is an equivalence of categories. But we're not so much interested with pre-sheaves with transfers, but rather with sheaves with transfers. So we'd like to compare sheaves with transfers. And here we have the following result, whose proof is similar to what we did before, so I would rather skip the proof. Well, as always, direct image of a sheaf is a sheaf, so that's nothing surprising. However, here we do have something slightly more subtle. Precisely, we have the following theory. Assume that phi lower star of M is a sheaf. Then M is a sheaf. And note that since phi lower star happens to be equivalent of categories, and phi upper star is defined as less adjoint to phi lower star, phi upper star is just inverse equivalence of categories. And essentially what this lemma shows, what this theorem shows, is that when you extend scalars in a sheaf, you get a sheaf. You cannot see that directly because you have no good description of what is this extension of scalars in a sheaf with transfers. But it follows from this theorem. So we get an equivalence of categories phi sharp, which goes from pre-sheaves with transfers over F to pre-sheaves with transfers over F infinity, and it takes sheaves to sheaves, so that no sheafication is needed. So the same thing because phi sharp already takes sheaves to sheaves. And finally, let me also, I'm running out of time, so let me skip the proof of the next result as well. So it's essentially straightforward model of all the previous results is that the functor phi upper star preserves cohomology. So as I said, instead of writing phi upper star, we'll commonly rule so phi upper star of F, we'll just write F with scales extend to F infinity. So we have the following theorem. For any x over f smooth, when we look on cohomology, Nisnevich cohomology of x with coefficients in a Nisnevich sheaf with transfers f, and as always p is inverted, this is the same as Nisnevich cohomology of x f infinity with coefficients in the sheaf f f infinity. So that when you extend scalars from f to f infinity, cohomology doesn't change. So let me sum up the basic properties of this functor extension of scalars in Nisnevich sheaves with transfers as follows. So this functor phi upper star is exact, which is very nice of it. Next, it takes takes homotopy invariant to homotopy invariant shift. Once again, something which you will never see from the explicit formula for the extension of scalars, but which follows from the fact that it coincides with the inverse to phi lower star. So it suffices to show that phi lower star has appropriate property. And so it's also equivalent of categories. And preserves cohomology. In the sense described above. Now, once you know these facts, you see readily that everything that works over FP, over F infinity, works over F as well, because there is no difference whatsoever between Nisnevich shift with transfers over F or over F infinity, and they do have exactly the same cohomology. So in particular, each homotopy invariant shift with transfers over F is strictly homotopy invariant. So the Waivowski construction goes through, once again, once you invert P. So if you work only with shifts of Z1 over P modulus. So for such shifts, there are no problem whatsoever. And the corresponding category D minus, which you can construct once you know this theorem of Waivowski, is canonically equivalent to the category dm minus of the perfect field f infinity. So even though you are interested in this non-perfect field, but all the questions pertaining to this field can be studied on the level of perfect field. So that's the second part. Now, so that's the second claim. I also wanted to discuss briefly what happens with in the other situation, which is partially discussed by Waivowski, well, without many details, but at least some remarks in that direction can be found. Let me say just two words. So we are still interested in this extension of scalars function, which is of principal importance for many purposes. You often want to extend scalars in your motive and see what you get over a larger field. And what are the properties of this function? So we discussed it in a very special situation where you have a non-perfect field and you go from F to its perfect closure. And the other case, which is of serious interest, is the case when your base field is perfect. And in this case, the extension will be separable. Every extension of a perfect field is separable. But let's say that it's separably generated. That is finitely generated, so it will be separably generated. And in this case, the corresponding field can be realized as field of functions on appropriate smooth scheme over F. So that's another special case. Let me just say what is true in this case. So you take E to be F of X, where X over F smooth irreducible. You take this very special field extension. Of course, it need not be perfect. If F were not perfect, even if F were perfect, but in this P case, it won't be perfect. But now we don't care. Once we invert P, we don't care. The same as before, we get a canonical function which is from Nisnevich sheaves. Let's start with pre-sheaves. Pre-sheaves with transfers over F and goes to pre-sheaves with transfers over E. This is not a fire shot. In this case, once again, this functor has a very explicit description, very nice and very explicit description, which looks as follows. So phi sharp of F applied to Y eta. So you should start with a scheme smooth over this field. But any such scheme can be realized as a generic fiber of a smooth morphism from certain Y to X. So you start with a smooth morphism Y to X. Here you have the generic point stack F of X here, and you take the generic fiber over this generic point. So this will be a typical scheme smooth over F of X. And the straightforward exercise shows that every smooth scheme over F of X may be realized in such way, maybe not over X itself, but at least over some sufficiently small neighborhood of the generic point. And now, here is the answer for what you get. So the answer will look as follows. So E equals direct limit over all open neighborhoods U in X, open, not empty, of phi of F itself applied to YU. So instead of taking the fiber over the generic point, you can take instead here U and take the inverse image of U in Y. So this is still a smooth scheme over F. It is smooth over U. U is smooth over F, so it's smooth over F. And so you can apply F to this guy and then take direct limit over all such U's. And it's relatively straightforward using basic algebraic geometry that the inverse image function in this case may be computed using this formula. And once you know that, you once again conclude readily that first, inverse image function is exact. It takes sheaves to sheaves. Then it takes homotopy invariant to homotopy invariant sheaves. And finally, it does not really commute with cohomology, but you can figure out how it's related to cohomology. So, for example, if you want to compute cohomology of such Y eta with coefficients in F E to be nothing but direct limit once again over all U's of cohomology of Y over U with coefficients in F. So everything is reduced to computing F cohomology for appropriate scheme. And this is very useful in particular. So one of the questions we had to resolve was whether the internal HOM object commutes with the extension of scalars. And so this is the crucial observation in that direction. And so the two results that were explained above prove that this result, that internal HOM object commutes with the extension of scalars, works in complete generality, provided that you invert the characteristic P of a base field. Well, that would be it.
Yeah,
this F was defined over F.
Yeah.
So
you did not say that any pitches would transfer somehow to
No, that I didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me? Wait a second. No. In case, if you just take a point,
yes.
Spec F, then Frobenius morphism is identity. So the Frobenius morphism for spec, so if you start with spec A, then what is spec A? Twisted ones. It will be spec of A twisted ones. So you take A, turn the with respect to this Frobenius morphism from F to itself with M. And you have a morphism from here to spec A. Which is you'll get a morphism in this direction, which on the level of rings looks as follows. On A, it's raising to the power P, but on F, it's constant, it's identity. So if you start with spec F, then there's no A. And because of that, it will be just an identity morphism. But you take the tensor product. So you take the tensor product along, so here you'll have F tensor over F. So let me rewrite it as follows. Here you have F with F. So this is you have a morphism from here to here that so this F is viewed as F algebra as identity, and this F corresponds to just embedding of F to itself by means of Frobenius map. So every element in here will be of the form A, let me say lambda tends F A, and with the property that lambda tends CA equals to C lambda to the C to the P lambda tends A. That's the defining relation. So the basis over here will be 1 tends 1. And it goes, so this, you raise this 1 to the power P, you still get 1, but this one you don't touch, so you'll get 1. So this map is always over F. Frobenius morphism is a morphism of schemes over F. So on spec F, it could not be anything else but identity. So I don't really have any, to give any computation, but by the very definition, Frobenius morphism is a morphism of schemes of finite type over F. So it's defined in such a way that on F is identity. So you shouldn't confuse Frobenius morphism with Frobenius map. So Frobenius map is map from F to itself raising to the power P, but Frobenius morphism is something slightly different.
Thank you.